We'll have thealexjonesstore.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
As you know, I don't like much of Hollywood. They don't make really anything that good, in my opinion, compared to what they used to, because they just are churning it out. But not Roger Avery. I mean, when I start going over the list of films, like, that's one of my favorites. 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 Pulp Fiction, Beowulf, the list goes on and on. His writing is amazing because, at an instinctive level, it connects with us. And so he's with us for about an hour and a half. We're very blessed to have him. And he said some really great topics. Recent movies as predictive programming, for example, Civil War and Leave the World Behind. The Obamas helped produce that. Iranians attacking Los Angeles, or is it part of a larger PSYOP? AI filmmaking, Ignorance is Bliss, films about forgiveness, the Wrights' return or attempt to return to Hollywood in an effort to regain the lost soft power. And we're going to just talk about a bunch of other subjects with him. So, Roger, I was really captivated, and I love Joe, good friends with him. But to be captivated by your interview, I never watched his interviews twice. I watched it twice over a couple of days working out, because I just wanted to, because everything you said was, I knew was accurate, but also it taught me a lot of things. And I wanted to ask you to talk about yourself, your journey, how you discovered that this Satanism really is a underpinning of so much of what's going on, where you think it's going, kind of your 35,000 foot view, and then you've got the floor to go through these topics, starting with predictive programming. But again, thank you so much for being here with us. Find you on X at Avery, A-V-A-R-Y, and Avery.com. So Roger Avery, thank you so much.
Thank you. First of all, you really summarized everything that's on my mind right now and that I'm thinking about and that I'm noticing, not just in Hollywood, but in the world in general. And secondly, I want to tell you that when people found out that I was coming on your show, I suddenly started receiving calls like, don't do it. Be cautious. You're going to get blackballed or whatever. That actually made me want to go on it more.
By the way, did this start only 2 hours ago? Because I was writing the show headline and almost didn't put Roger Avery in it, because a lot of times guests don't come on because I announce right away, but then they get a bunch of calls.
Yeah. I got the usual calls from the usual cast of characters, people trying to calm the narrative, I guess. And I've been a fan of yours for a really long time. I mean, to be honest, I've been a fan of yours since I think it was Waking Life that you were in. And I was like, who is that guy? And then when I started researching you and discovering you and then watching you over the years and realizing this guy, speaks his mind. He speaks the truth as he sees it, the testimony of his eyes. And you take arrows like crazy. And you've remained steadfast and I look at you as, somebody I think in your last segment said, that you're the canary. What they mean is you're the canary in the coal mine. You're the guy on the, in the trenches, on the front lines, speaking your beliefs. And there you go. I love this scene. And actually, I'm a big Linkletter fan.
I am too.
Linkletter, I'm glad to hear that. I didn't know what your relationship was like with him after all these years and everything. But, I think Rick is, of all the filmmakers out there right now of my generation, I think he's the best. I think he's the best of us and that he represents the best of us. I think he takes the greatest risks of any of us.
There's a dirty side of Hollywood. He's the opposite. Just baseball, America, apple pie, a true classic liberal, just a classy, just totally real guy.
Well, you know, it's crazy because we're right now in the Academy season and or the award season, I guess, as you might call it. And I think the Academy Awards are Sunday. I never watched the Academy Awards. In fact, I resigned from the Academy a couple of years back. And I one thing I did notice was of all these movies that are listed, and I think there's some, you know, interesting movies made this year, more so than recent years past. But I noticed that one movie was missing, glaringly missing for me, and that was his film Nouvelle Vague. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about the making of Breathless. And I think this is hands down, without question, absolutely the best movie of the year. And it's completely ignored by the Academy. But then we have to ask ourselves, what is the Academy? Like, what is this organization? And it's a and what are these awards? And what was the original purpose of these awards? And I mean, you know, I entered this industry very naive and loving movies and believing in movies. And I look at the cinema experience as a kind of near sacred congregation. You know, you sit in a dark theater. You're sitting next to someone you don't even know, who is maybe completely different than you. You know, the different race, creed, religion, like everything is different about them, and yet you're sitting there next to this person in the dark, and you're both sharing this kind of ecstatic waking dream, looking at little stained glass windows projected on the screen,
and we know humans are psychically connected. Princeton's now measured it. The devices, so it's really a communal psychic experience.
Yeah, it's a congregational experience, and I think it takes us back to church, and even before church, you know, back to the campfire where we're just sitting in the dark of night, telling each other stories of our myths and traditions, just trying to get through the night. And so there's this really important quality about being next to someone, a real person, again, someone you don't know, and sharing this kind of invisible bodily electricity together as you share this waking dream. And
it's an incredible communion. It's an incredible communion.
It's an incredible communion, and it's a really important aspect of our culture. And I really believe that there are dark forces that kind of wish to separate us.
That's what the lockdowns were about. I mean, they wanted to make us depressed and isolated.
Yeah, divide us up. Lock us up into a room, you're a slave to some subscription service, and you're watching things alone, and then they can control the programming individually to you. And over the years, I've kind of watched as movies have transformed and changed, and maybe it's a function of my becoming older and seeing the world more, because when I was young, as I said, I was naive when I entered into this business. I almost approached it like a surrealist. You know, I came in just believing that movies were about creative expression. I always knew that there was a certain amount of, I think we can call it corporate propaganda because it's show business, but there was usually an equal part of personal propaganda. And you would have filmmakers, you know, putting their messages about humanism and about culture.
So it was a trade-off. You know, it was, I mean, you knew what you were doing, but it was still a trade-off.
There was something of a balance. And also the corporations, you knew that they were just a slave to money. They just want to make money. That's the business part of it. You know, the show part was usually something else. And just over the years, I feel like, honestly, because the technologies have changed, the medium itself has transformed. We've gone from film, which is an absolutely separate medium from digital projection or digital filmmaking. And I'm not saying I'm not trying to create an argument where one is better than the other necessarily. I'm just saying they are different. They're as different as oil paint and watercolor paint, you know, oil and water, completely separate. And yet they're both paint. Except,
well,
you know,
one is so, just to dumb it down, one is so disposable because it's so quick and there's so much of it. Just going back to film, because I was involved, like you were before me, literally 3/4-inch tape, very precious, you know, with film, 35 millimeter, didn't have any money, could only shoot it one time, had to get it right. Yeah. And so there was something magic about that. It was limited to capture this. It made it so much more powerful. Now with digital, you can do it over and over again. And you'd think that would make them do more takes. They're not pouring their soul into it.
They don't even cut in between takes because, you know, the video you just run. Well, first of all, directors now, they'll delete takes like they're deleting an email. Like there's no real respect for the moment. We used to say, I'll see you in the moment. And what the moment was after all this intense preparation on set and getting everything just right, and the actors are off in their trailer or if in a room somewhere, you know, running their lines in their head and getting ready. There was all this like excitement built up, and then you would get there in front and then you start hearing the camera running, and you know that you're spending like 4 cents every frame, and you know, as it's whipping through the camera. And you know that you're burning money in that moment. And in that moment, you suddenly pop into another reality and you perform.
Because it's do or die. I mean, I've not been involved in a film like you have. But let me take Linkletter. When we did Waking Life and the computers were crashing later and they had trouble doing it rotoscope back then. It's so easy now. But I remember later they called me down when they were actually going to pick the scenes because he said, just say whatever you want. And the first take, he goes, that's so good. I usually do at least 3 takes. Because it was streaming, he goes, do it one more time. And then they sat there in between all their being busy 6 months later. He calls me and he goes, I want you to sit here and look at this. Which one do you think? Because we spent days watching these 2 takes. We think it's this one, but what do you think? And I said, yeah, it's obviously that one. But they still spent days just deciding, even though they already knew the first take, which was stream of consciousness unedited, was the one. They still spent 2 days watching it and it totally changed.
Well, you know, it's funny, the people look at Waking Life and you think, oh, it's just computer graphics and it's like a filter, but it's not. That movie was, the Rotoshop process was developed by a guy named Bob Savastan, who was probably sitting there with you at that time.
I remember he was there. He was actually there. Yeah.
They Tommy Pallotta. Paint. It's all the hand of man is over every single frame of that. And I think that, people are, as filmmakers, we're constantly trying to capture dreams because a movie is like being able to look inside of someone else's mind and to see their dreams. When I watch a movie by Kubrick, I'm watching Kubrick's dreams on screen. And with this movie, he captured dreams better than most. And many have tried. Polanski does dreams very, very well, but Waking Life in particular, I think, was just such an amazing experience and such an experimental film. And right now you're showing a Scanner Darkly, which was his other movie done like this, which, I mean, I just think Linkletter through the years, with what was the movie Boyhood and where, he's shooting it over long periods of time. He's doing stunts in movies that we just, you dream about doing these kind of things as a filmmaker, and he is consistently doing it, whether he succeeds or fails, at the box office, because, sometimes your movies don't work with a general audience at first. He's always trying these amazing stunts. And this film that he's recently done, Nouvelle Vague, which is about the French New Wave of filmmakers, what I loved about it is that it was completely disconnected from any of the politics of our time right now or of any of our current issues. And it is a movie that is purely about cinema and what it means to become a filmmaker and the evolution of Godard as he was becoming a director and how everybody views you as you're doing it and the kind of approach you take to, toward making a movie.
And so they're just examining a topic instead of trying to make it political.
He's not making it political at all. I mean, there may be some kind of politics in the movie, but what he's doing is he's really analyzing the French New Wave filmmakers and putting it all into context. And I learned things. I mean, I've studied. I've worked in France. I've made 2 films in France. I'm friends with all sorts of French filmmakers. I've read about the French New Wave. And I'm watching the movie and just seeing how he put the whole thing into context. I think it's one of the best movies about movie making that I've ever seen. And for it to be completely just, brushed aside by the Academy and not considered just makes me reminds me of what a joke the Academy Awards are.
Would you say it's because he's not a toady and not part of Hollywood and just lives out in Bastrop at his ranch?
I mean, that might be part of it. It's difficult to say because he's also made movies that are, like School of Rock. That may have been a very personal film for him, but it's also a very audience accessible, movie that's for.
Or Days of Confused was about him growing up in Texas. It's personal, but everybody likes it.
Yeah, and so he has this innate ability that is, and he sometimes makes movies like, what was it called? Was it called Flags of Your Fathers? I'm trying to remember. Okay, this movie almost has no cinema in it. It's just him literally shooting because he knows he's mature enough to know when to step back, when to not let his ego get in the way of the movie itself. And so he in many ways serves the artistic statement that he's making, and he's had enough success.
I agree. Rick is so humble, and it's not fake. It's like he's like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's like a servant.
Yeah, and I only know him like lightly. I've only met him a few times, but I admire him more than anyone of my generation right now. I think he's the guy. When you look at his body of work and you look at the statements that he's made about humanity and who we are as a culture, he's a really important filmmaker. He's maybe the most important American filmmaker there is, from my perspective.
Well, Roger Avery,
and I think this movie that he's made is as as important to cinema. It's like it's almost as if Godard were making a dramatic movie about the making of his movie while he was making the movie. And Rick went out, and my understanding is that they shot it on 16, just in Paris, with everybody in costume and everything. But, Paris is modern now, and you've got, dozens of cars in the background. And that they just kind of used digital lightly to change the background to make Paris to make it look like how it used to look. And he absolutely captures one. I mean, as I was watching the movie, my wife, I'm not sure she enjoyed it as much as I did, but she was watching it. She was like, I don't know if I can enjoy this because I feel like I've lived this. Like I watched you go through that exact same process. And so for anybody wanting to learn about movies, the history of cinema, the what it means to be a director and the what you have to go through to make a film, this is the movie. And so, I love it partly because I'm a filmmaker and, it's of interest to me. So maybe it's not going to connect
so
with
the reality of it. Is
but I can't believe that the Academy, would ignore this movie as they have and to show other films which are, successful movies, like, for example, Sinners. I can understand why that movie made money and, why a general audience really ate it up. But I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, that's like From Dusk Till Dawn. It's like From Dusk Till Dawn. I don't really see it being too much different from that film. I prefer From Dusk Till Dawn because I like Robert Rodriguez as a filmmaker. But it just looks like a repeat to me. And so for this movie to garner like all the nominations that it's garnered, I'm like, what's really going on here? And then we just have to remind ourselves, what is the Academy Awards? Why did they start the Academy Awards? And the reason was because they, around this time of the year, you want to get a little bit more juice out of your box office and you want to kind of, punch the gas a little. And so you remind everybody and you say, oh, this is the best film. And then, it makes a little bit more money.
So it's purely exploitive instead of making it by the art form that made it popular to begin with. We got 4 minutes to break.
It has nothing to do with best picture. That's a ludicrous term to make for that awards show to make. I mean, even look, I won an Academy Award for Pulp Fiction, and I personally, love Pulp Fiction. But when you look at the other movies that we were up against at that time, Forrest Gump and the Kieślowski film, and Ed Wood, these other movies were extraordinary. I mean, I personally think Ed Wood was my favorite film of that year. Again, it's another movie about movie making and in black and white. Maybe this is a thing.
But I think you were too close to your creation. Pulp Fiction was totally new and also exposed a lot of undercurrent that was real and just really hit people. Like, nothing ever been made like that. So it was truly avant-garde.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the things that it was the structure of the movie was one of the reasons people were considering it so avant-garde in the moment and so timely. A lot of it is Quentin's execution of the film and how he approached the material, because the actual structure, you know, when you look at, I mentioned Kieślowski before, he had done a film called Three Colors, you know, Red, White, and Blue, with Juliette Binoche, and Julie Delpy was in white, and then Irene Jacob was in red. And these movies are doing the same thing. They're three separate films where you can see in the background the other films taking place. They're all taking place at the same time. There are three movies about one movie. There was also the Jim Jarmusch movie Mystery Train, which came out at that time, which these are all like happening right at the same moment. Mystery Train, you know, it's three stories that take place in this hotel, and you can hear this gunshot going off that you can use to synchronize the time within those three stories. And so it was kind of like, you know, an idea whose time had come. And what really makes Pulp Fiction, I think, special was, you know, I mean, Quentin's voice as a director. You know, he brought a very populist approach to the film, and he is, you know, he as a film viewer and as a filmmaker, he always goes for what is proven. I think he studies films and he figures out what is proven. What does the audience love? What does he love? And then he executes it. And some people say that's copying, but you know what it really is when you're a young filmmaker, you look to your parent filmmakers, you look to your cinematic forefathers.
Well, civilization is building on what was best and innovating and making it even better. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, like, you know, when you're a child, you look to your parents and then you copy and you learn how to be. And then at a certain point, you kind of learn how to walk on your own. And, you know, with Pulp Fiction, he's looking to his cinematic forefathers. He's looking to, I mean, at that time, De Palma, Scorsese, like there's a whole group of them that are like Quentin's parents. And that are, you know, and there's, from my perspective as a filmmaker and somebody who worked on Pulp Fiction, there's a bunch of filmmakers that I look to who were my parents. I mean, that shot right there of Bing Rames walking across the street, that's from Psycho. That's taken directly from Psycho. He's walking across the street. He looks into the car. He sees, like, you know, that happens in Psycho. And I wrote it because I like that scene in Psycho.
Amazing. So, Roger Avery, stay there. I want to come back and into current predictive programming, all the Satanism stuff on Joe Rogan. Incredible. It's amazing to have you. Listen to you all day. This is riveting radio.
My pleasure.
TV. Wow. And you can find him online at Avery.com and at Avery on X. I'm Alex Jones. Back in a few minutes.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro cardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultrastore.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for AutoShip. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Bitly to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering it. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information is hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.